Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough. This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me, I've waited long enough.
As I gaze upon the beautiful abyss of outer space, I can't help but reminisce on how we held onto our faith. Gold is how we stayed till the day that time would say that Toonami's back, bitches. Pardon my francais. Now every week the absolution blasts off while the masses watch as an old familiar mascot by the name of Tom takes a seat and kicks the broadcast off, making major moves like a triple cut backdrop. I still remember watching Nebion doing damage and thinking, damn, is Goku ever gonna reach Namek? Obviously, I got a lot of love for the classics. The speed at which I used to run home to watch was the fastest. Absolution moving, flying through the galaxy. Toonami's back, the slap in the face to those who doubted it. Remain Toonami faithful till the day that I am gray and old. And like a Super Saiyan's glow, I will always stay gold.
This is Nerdcore Absolution. Come to peace with your inner nerd, and after you can stay gold like T.O.M. Chilling out the galaxy, and we know him. Putting tunes up that'll keep you up. Glued to the screen like you do too much. The galaxy is ours, the sun and the stars. Toonami's on and chilling hard.
Watching closely from a perch among the stars as viewers await the moment.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis.
Can you feel it?
And I welcome you to episode 124 of Prerogative. It has been a while, but on this episode, we come back in full force after a five-month hiatus to review one of the most beloved Gundam entries of all time. One of the Gundam franchises that helped make Gundam a household name on Toonami. I'm, of course, talking about the Gundam franchise that tells you that this hand of mine is burning red, and its loud roar tells me to grasp victory. I'm, of course, talking about G Gundam. Right here on the Prerogative today. And with that, welcome back. After 5 months, there is really no way to get into it that I've just been gone for 5 months. It's one of those things. And 2015 was a year where I struggled a lot. And there were episodes that came out that were very good. And I think going back over and looking back over the past year, part of what took me out is I've tried too much to bring people on. And so I've pushed back my own deadlines and timelines and allowed other things to take over. Schoolwork, work, among other things, and things that just left me tired to where I didn't watch a series, and I'm one of those people that like to actually watch the entire series so that I can have it in good memory of everything. So if it's really good, there are things that will stick with me. Of course, if it's really bad, you can tell that I don't have a lot to talk about because not a lot stuck with me, and that's one of the key things about, I think, reviewing anything in general. Which leads me sort of my next point, which is, since it's been 5 months, and for some people, this may be your first podcast, I also want this episode to be a good jumping on point for people. So as such, allow me to reintroduce myself. I've actually been doing that a bit with some other podcasts that I've been doing. So my name is Thomas Mattis. I am an anime fan. Pretty much since 1993 when I first discovered it. When, you know, my friend brought me over, he says, I got this cool thing to show you. And it was the first episodes of BioBoost Armor Giver. And that was really the first sort of memory I have of an animation that was really different from everything else. I have faint memories of Heavy Metal, but that's really one or two scenes in total. But again, that's an American animation, and also an anthology series with different styles. some cartoon and some anime, which is the other thing that's, by the way, unique about me is, more than other people, I have a belief that anime is not something indicative to Japan itself. I think other cultures can do anime because I think anime is overall a style. So that's something that I also work off of, and a lot of it is, you know, to also go into how I discuss philosophy and review things and debate things here on the show. Because there are a lot of reviewers out there and a lot of people who claim to be professors and people who've studied all these books and done their all this research and everything. I'm not one of those people. I am just a person who's mostly been a fan for, it's been over 20 years now. It's 2016, 23 years about. And that's not saying that I don't know anything. But for most of my life, I've done all I can as a fan who's interested and wanting to get into the field, to read books on the subject. You know, I'm currently going to college to be in the entertainment industry, so I'm studying filmmaking, directing, screenwriting. I'm studying all of this. And then the reason I say that is to say this, which is that I don't come at it as some, like, I'm a professional. You know, I am. I am a fan, just like you, just like me. And I do approach things from a fan standpoint. I also approach things from what I like to call common knowledge. Any knowledge I sort of talk about is knowledge that you yourself can go on the internet and find. I know a lot of people blast Wikipedia, but Wikipedia is a good source, especially if you can find information to back up their information, which I always suggest. But for the most part, anything I say overall is common knowledge, and then I go off of that, and I, you know, again, it's my own influence and my own ideas and my own opinions, and I'm completely honest about that. You know, as geeks, we have a thing to where we say, you know, I believe this, and then there are people who believe that, and it's okay for them to be wrong. We make that joke all the time. But, you know, in all actuality, it's my opinion. You are welcome to agree or disagree with it. There are a lot of opinions I say that people disagree with. I just think that unless there's like actual fact that can prove me wrong, again, we're talking about opinion. And that's what reviews are opinions. You're here because hopefully I have a very honest opinion that you'd like to hear. Maybe it's a bit more knowledgeable than other people you think. You like it, you enjoy it, I make it fun. Whatever it may be, I have an opinion and you want to hear it. And overall, that's what reviewers do. There are people go to read their review that is based off their opinion. So you're welcome to agree or disagree. And I'm sure plenty of people disagree with tons of opinions I do. I know because they tell me all the time. So, yeah. So, again, I go off common knowledge. I am very opinionated. But I also try to base it in what I call, like I said, common fact, common knowledge. You know, the idea that, you know, things like, to use an example, camera movement, camera techniques, you know. If I'm talking about something and I like the way the camera moved in the scene, I will talk about that camera movement and why it works so well. You know, I will, because again, I want to acknowledge so many things that go on in animation that we don't think about. Camera movement, camera placement, which we don't think about cameras in animation because we think, well, it's drawn, but again, the artist has to think about the camera and how the camera moves in it. So again, essentially, animators in their own way are cameramen, setting up the shot as well, along with drawing it. I talk about music and why music works, and I'll go into why using particular instruments in a score or an intro song or whatever will help or hurt it. I talk about voice acting, which acting is important, but I also consider it the least important because there are a lot of good series that don't have good acting. They don't have awful acting, but they don't have good acting. But again, it's a thing, I approach it from the idea that it's about passion. You know, there may be missteps and flubs and everything, but overall, if you have passion, which this is, by the way, a topic we will be talking about today with G Gundam. If you have passion, you know, I can forgive mess ups because, again, that passion really carries through along with the charisma. But overall, to me, the most important part of anything is story, which is why overall I do story last. You know, I build up to it with talking about sort of the music and the animation and the acting that supports it so that you understand overall it builds to why I like or dislike what I like in the story. You know, one way I always approach explaining it is that I sort of look at an animated movie like, or for that matter, any movie, as like a sentence. The story is the noun. That is the main part of the sentence. The camera work or animation is the verb that helps describe the noun. And then music and acting and all the other little things are the adjectives that help the verb describe the noun. It's basic sentence structure. So I do approach it from that standpoint. So if this is your first time listening, I hope you certainly enjoy the way I review, and I hope maybe I inform you of some things or give you something to think about differently, because ultimately that's really all I hope to do. I think I have a unique opinion and I approach things differently, and I hope to make people think about things differently. You know, in particular with this series that we're going to review today in G Gundam, because G Gundam does remain a very divisive series in the franchise that is Gundam. There are, and really it is sort of a, it is a point that you can put a line down the middle, and like, these are the two different Gundam fans. Like, all the Gundam fans sort of pre-G Gundam that hate it, or mind you, the ones that hate it are really sort of Universal Century and they, fans who love the original Mobile Suit Gundam and the original storyline, and they hate everything that G Gundam and everything after it created. And then there are those who, again, maybe they came after G Gundam, though there are, though, again, not that everybody who came to the franchise after G Gundam hates the original trilogy. There are those, again, back and forth, but there are those who like G Gundam who ultimately look at, you know, the Universal Century as not as good as people remember it, and really enjoy what series like G Gundam really brought to the table, along with everything that came after it. So it is very divisive in that standpoint. I tend to lean towards more of the latter, but at the same time, I don't think that the Universal Century is awful. Ultimately, we have to look at the legacy, I think, of G Gundam, and for that matter, we'll bring Gundam Wing into this as well. Because both series ultimately saved the franchise. That is something that I don't think can be denied. As much as maybe G Gundam and post-G Gundam franchise fans may say. And I say that because ultimately, and not many fans I think still notice, Gundam up till 1994 when G Gundam was released was not a big anime franchise. I mean, it was an anime franchise, but actually Macross was the more beloved franchise in Japan. In some instances, Macross is still very beloved in Japan. But it was considered the better franchise up until G Gundam. And mind you, 1994 not only saw the release of G Gundam, it also saw the release of Macross 7, which competed for a lot of months with G Gundam. But ultimately, G Gundam is the series that made a lot of fans jump from being Macross fans to Gundam fans, or at least consider Gundam to be the superior mech franchise, and thus the important part and important legacy of both G Gundam and Gundam Wing, because you have to look at them in tandem here, is that they established Gundam as the prevalent and quintessential mech franchise over Macross. For pretty much for 15, 20 years, up until 94, Macross was the superior franchise, or was considered the superior franchise. But then G Gundam helped Gundam break out of a shell that was keeping a lot of people away from it and made it the more superior, along with Gundam Wing. And yeah, there is a debate which is better, Gundam Wing or G Gundam. You know, I have a friend, Mike, you know, we have this debate all the time. He loves G Gundam, and he trashes Gundam Wing, and I thoroughly disagree with him. But at the end of the day, you have to look at them both and what they did. They targeted two different audiences, but ultimately they targeted audiences that were important to making Gundam the quintessential franchise. They broke open the sort of Gundam stereotype, as you will, and established Gundam to a more broader audience, with, you know, G Gundam targeting more children, and for that matter, a male demographic, whereas Gundam Wing targeted a more general demographic, but in particular targeted a lot more females than Gundam had in the past. And you have to look at Gundam's history to really discuss that. Again, the Universal Century, the Mobile Suit Gundam, and the franchises that came from that, which is Mobile Suit Gundam, Gundam 0080 Pocket War, Gundam 0083 Stardust Memories. Eighth Mobile Suit Team came after Gundam Wing, which is why it's also beloved, because again, it was a little bit different than other Universal Century stories. But, you know, Gundam 0083 Stardust Memories, Gundam Zeta, Gundam Double Zeta, Char's Counterattack Movie, and there's a couple other entries that are part of the Universal Century timeline. It can get really, really, really confusing. I remember trying to go back and particularly because of how it came out. It's like you had Mobile Suit, particularly on Toonami, you had the original Mobile Suit Gundam, which came out in 2001. G Gundam came on Toonami, by the way, in 2002. And Gundam Wing was in 2000, mind you. But that in 2001 saw 8th Mobile Suit Team. It saw, which I don't know if a lot of people understood, was the sort of side story that was going on at the same time as the original Mobile Suit Gundam storyline, even though they're like 20 years apart. And then, of course, we would, a couple years later, as part of Adult Swim, see Gundam 0083 Stardust Memories. But then there was also Gundam Zeta and Gundam Double Zeta, which really didn't see American shores until only a couple years ago when it was released by Bandai right before they stopped doing DVDs and are distributing anime to America, mind you. So, there, again, it's a lot of confusing, and the storylines are very meddled, and the original Universal Century timeline is a lot more about, it's really just the tragedy of war. There really are no winners, and ultimately, I think that's what kind of pushed people away, is ultimately people want a happy ending. And Macross did this as well, but Macross would have a bit more happy endings. Even if you didn't agree with who ended up with who. You know, again, I point to listening to my Macross 2 review and my Robotech review with my friend Donna Mark to establish those. But, I apologize, I can't remember which number it's on the top of my head. But, you know, ultimately it had a happy ending, and I'm of the belief that people, especially adults and teenagers, will say they want dark and tragic, because the perception of in society is that once you reach a certain age, basically you should like dark and tragic. You should accept that there's no such thing as a happy ending, and just accept the fact that the world can be a cruel place. But the fact of the matter is, people like happy endings. People want hope. People want to believe that tomorrow will be a better day. And so, whether they admit it or not, they like happy endings. It's ultimately one of the reasons why Disney is tremendously successful, because ultimately their stories have happy endings. At the end of the day, people have hope towards the next day. And that's something that Macross did that the original Universal Century Mobile Suit Gundam storyline didn't. it had a happy ending. Like, the end of Mobile Suit Gundam wasn't really happy. You know, it's more that they survive to see the next day. But there's so much depth, and there's so many characters that you love who ultimately end up dying at some point in the storyline. You're never really given a chance to like them and love them and follow their story. This, mind you, is something that G Gundam, Gundam Wing, and the quintessential Gundams after this have done. Is they've done that happy ending, and that's one big reason why Gundam ultimately, with G Gundam, it changed the franchise for the better. And that's something we'll explore more of today, is ultimately why G Gundam, and ultimately Gundam Wing, made the franchise better. We're going to see if it's still good, because again, G Gundam was 94, so it's over 20 years old. It's 22 years old, to be more exact. It started April 94 and ran through to March 1995. Like I said, it co-competed with Macross 7, which actually started October of 94. And like I said, ultimately, G Gundam was considered a better series and sort of changed the fortune. And Gundam became, like I said, the quintessential mech franchise because of that, over Macross. Or, in particular, at least in America. I think Macross and Gundam are still neck and neck in Japan, but at least in America, it is the Gundam franchise that is more beloved than Macross. And it is part of the reason why things like Macross Zero and Macross Frontier, among other Macross series, have never really been brought over to America. So, that is all something we'll explore, because there's so many fascinating things with it. You know, again, in today's age, we like to talk about masculinity and femininity, and I see positive both. You know, I think, again, far too often and I know this for a fact because I took a class where I asked the question, what are the positives of masculinity, and no one could give me an answer. But, you know, again, we tend to look at masculinity as completely negative, and I think masculinity and femininity have positives and negatives, all about how they're used and how people accept them, because we all have masculine and we all have feminine qualities. You know, emotion being a feminine quality is not a stereotype or a negative thing. It's fact, and it depends on the situation whether it's good or bad. Just like sort of aggressiveness is a masculine quality, and it can be good or bad depending on the situation. And the thing I actually find funny about Gundam Wing and G Gundam, actually, because I did a lot of comparing while watching it and looking at things and seeing what they did different. And, you know, considering their target audiences, you know, G Gundam was more of a male demographic, whereas Gundam Wing targeted more general, but in particular a lot more feminine demographic. Yet, the masculine feminine qualities are actually switched on them. Really, G Gundam is a lot more feminine in the fact that there's a lot built upon the use of emotion and everything, whereas, you know, Gundam Wing is a lot more masculine in sort of the political and the self-sacrifice, which, again, is a masculine quality. Both are good, used in positive stances in both series. So I find that very interesting. But that's a lot more on story, and that is something we'll get more into definitely when we get to story. Because it is time for us to get into review proper. Because we have so much more to talk about, and I do have an overall way to break it down. Because like I said, I want to explain music, and I want to explain animation and all that, so you have a better understanding of why I'm saying what I'm saying about story. So why don't we get into that? And first, let me give you more on that. If you've never seen G Gundam by any chance, which probably sucks for you considering I've been talking about it for the past 20 minutes, I apologize for you having no idea what the series is about, even though I've been talking about it. But G Gundam takes place in the future century timeline. It's the first Gundam franchise to break from the Universal timeline. But in this future century, the world governments have, and the people of Earth, have moved to space in space colonies as years of war have damaged the Earth. And they, to stop war from happening in space, they set up the Gundam Fight, which has been happening every 4 years, and has happened 13 times. So do your math. I can't do it off the top of my head. 13 times 4, as I do it real quick. And 4, 52 years. So it's been 52 years since it's been established. And, actually 56, because it's... No, it is 13, so 52 years. Anyways, I'm getting a hold of myself. Anyways, the point is, they've set up the Gundam Fight to determine which government colony rules the entire Earth Sphere. The winner of the tournament wins their country the right to rule the Earth Sphere. And on this Gundam Fight, the 13th Gundam Fight, Neo Japan sends a fighter named Domokashu to fight for Neo Japan. But he also has a different purpose, to find a man called Kyoji, who's his brother, who has stolen evil, disastrous, and destructive Gundam called the Dark Gundam. All while trying to fight and win his country the right to rule all of space, so that he can also free his father, who has been punished to a frozen sleep for the crimes of his brother. With his partner Rain, he goes on the search for both the Dark Gundam and for other fighters to defeat. Ladies and gentlemen, this is G Gundam. And again, it builds on it. So, starting off with music, it's, and of course, you heard the first intro song right there. Let's talk about the intro and outro songs. I really, really do love the intro songs. They just have such energy. In particular, the first one I really love. I mean, that of probably all of the intro and outro songs, G Gundam's intro song is probably the first one. Fly in the Sky is probably the most memorable, at least for me it is. And just, you know, again, by the way, both songs, synthesizers, you know, it's classic sort of 90s synthesizer rock and all of that, and sort of that pop rock. But those synthesizers really come out and really just add that unique 90s campy feel to it. And by the way, and that's the thing I think people misunderstand about camp, is a lot of times camp can be important, and plays a good part to why the series is actually good. And it's where it is a bit campy with it, but it's that good, like, ooey gooey, like, delicious campy that just is perfect. It makes you sing along, like, fly in the sky. And by the way, you can hear, like, the guitar in it. It's, of course, synthesized, so it's a bit mellowed, but it works perfectly. And it's like, you're like, listen to these songs, like, I love these songs, and you know, like, these songs would be even absolutely more better, like, if you were, like, heavy and hard rock, like, shining on down. And, of course, Dressed You Forever Again is a little more, actually, a bit more feminine, more mellow, in a good way, mind you, of an intro song. It just, again, it has that same energy, and it just gets, it's the way they build up to the chorus that makes these songs work so much. And ultimately, again, accomplishing that goal of the intro song that gets you excited, gets you into what's about to happen. So I love the intro song. And then, of course, the outro songs, they're not bad. They're not good. Again, it's something you find yourself skipping. They're very simple. They're very mellow. And again, it's a sort of cool-down music. But again, when you're watching them all in a row, like, you know, you do, it's ultimately the thing you skip ahead of. Like, the intro songs and the intro animation are great enough that you find yourself watching it over and over again, so you stick to that. But again, the outro is something you skip through. So, if there was, like, anything of this series that I absolutely didn't like, this is probably it. This is probably, the outro songs are probably one of the worst things of the series. And that should tell you something. When the outro songs are, like, the worst thing you can find about the series, that tells you, I think, that the series may be a little good. Though I like the second outro theme more than I like the first one. But yeah, I found myself skipping the outro theme a lot. Then there's the music overall. And there's sort of two types of music that we have for this series. There is sort of the instrumental and orchestra music. Things like Burning Finger. I have a couple of these tracks, so I know, like, the name of these tracks. It's like Burning Finger and King of Hearts. In particular, King of Hearts is, like, it's one of my favorite instrumental pieces. Of course, I also have a more an orchestrated piece that's, like, not from the series, but like a bigger orchestra. And it's just such a beautiful piece of music. It's just, like, so captain, like, da 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 da. And it's just like, oh, it's so captivating. And the instrumental pieces of music in this series are just so captivating. And just, they do a great job of providing that sort of emotional feel for the scenes that are going on. And again, that's something we talked about. That emotional feel. The use of the series overall, the use of the music to, again, lend itself to the emotion. And again, like I said, emotion is a big part of this series. Emotion, whether it be anger, and then, of course, the topic of being a good, being in control of your emotions is a common theme that runs through the series. And so, again, the instrumental music does a great job of lending itself to giving descriptive nature and descriptions and a feel to that emotion. And that's really the reason why this music is so good, is that, again, you feel the music. Great music is music you feel. You can listen to music, and it's fun to, like, do karaoke and sing songs and everything. And this goes to the intro themes as well, is great music, though, is music you feel. This is the same thing, and mind you, this pretty much goes for anything. Story, animation, music, acting, when you feel something, it's just so much better because it connects with your soul that much better. And with G Gundam, the music, I just feel it. And, you know, here's the thing. Different people feel different things. So, while I'm saying it's good because I feel it, I understand another person might sit there and say, I don't feel it. But in this case, you feel the passion, you feel the emotion, and it just makes the music that much better at doing its job of being that emotion for what's going on screen. And then there's actual songs that are part of it. You know, through different places, it's like a sort of sorrowful song that's sung, not a lullaby, but like, I can't think of the word, but there's it's sung by a female artist, and it's like, in sort of mellow, sort of sad times, it pops up. Like, for instance, Saisaichi, he has his own piece of music, which has sort of a almost rap quality to it. It's like that 90s Asian Chinese rap, like Dondo Hot. Again, I'm not trying to be stereotypical or offensive here, but I'm trying my best to like imitate what I heard. It's you know, that sort of bop 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 feel to, like, if like a Jackie Chan movie and they're in Hong Kong and it's sort of like bouncy hip-hop pop type of music, and it really comes into play during the Saisaichi based episode. I want to say it's episode 27, I think, where Saisaichi has to face Mermaid Gundam from Denmark, and of course, you know, the classic story, like, I have to face this guy tomorrow, and then I meet this mysterious beautiful girl. Oh my god, this mysterious beautiful girl that I fallen in love with is related to him. Oh, whatever will we do? Can I fight him and still remain in love with her? And again, it's a very campy story that's been done over and over again. But again, to establish here, just because it's been done before doesn't mean that the story and the idea is bad. I'm laughing at it because they do it in a campy way that makes it fun and enjoyable. And that actually makes you connect with that part of the story a lot more. And one of the key things that helps that, again, that is part of that camp, is this song that is Saisaichi that is like Chinese themed and everything. It's just fun and enjoyable. Again, it's not supposed to be indicative of Chinese music, but it's just that fun sort of pop that takes elements of Chinese musical styles. It's just fun. And like, I'm listening to they're doing it where like they're padding landscapes and they have it going. It's like, what am I watching? I don't know what I'm watching, but I'm having fun watching it and I'm enjoying it. So, and the little insert songs are like that throughout the series. And of course, some of the insert songs are of course the intro themes as well, which are always awesome to hear. The sort of instrumental pieces of those intro songs. So overall, the music for G Gundam, with the exception of the outro songs, which are probably one of the worst things about the series, just because they're boring and, like I said, you skip through them. But everything else, music-wise, just on point, on key, does its job wonderfully. The intro songs get you hyped and get you excited for the series. And the instrumental pieces and insert songs are just fun. The instrumental pieces are full of emotion and passion that you can feel in the insert songs. It's, again, also establish a fun feel to the series. I think the music overall does a really great job of enhancing emotions and enhancing the overall series feel. So the music is outstanding for G Gundam. With that, let's move right into animation. And overall, I really do like the style. Again, this is another benchmark. G Gundam was sort of the last of the 90s, along with Gundam Wing. You know, Gundam Wing's animation would get better. But really here, it's like there is a much more masculine Dragon Ball Z, Fist of the North Star, style here. It would get, you see essences of Japan's Bushojo style creep in here or there, with particular characters like George and Saisaichi. Like, the line work is a little bit more neater than it is in past sort of early 90s series. And again, like I said, Gundam Wing would see a much more use of that Bushojo, darker tones and things like, but here it's still very bright. And again, and that also comes from the target audience being both male and younger. As a target audience, again, the use of bright colors here. Even like when it's supposed to be dark, it's like a dark bright that really pops off the screen. So, in general, I love the color use throughout the series. I think it's done to extremely well. But line work's very nice. It's like 90s again. It was a bit, like the line work. Like it's more Hatch line work, if that's a way to describe it. Like, for instance, like there'd be like a slight line here or there. Something, by the way, about animation overall. Like, I can forgive the, you know, the lapse in animation here or there, because, you know, again, these series are on budgets, and like it's easy to sit there and say like, oh, there's a little bit of a lapse in animation, or they reuse this or did this. It's obviously they were running out of budget here, but like overall, like that doesn't detach me. Like, there are some reviewers on certain sites to where that would deter them from liking an episode or a series. I personally can forgive it, because to me, like I said, the most important part is the story. Overall, if the general animation is good, I can forgive a lapse here or there. Again, it's a series. It's what you're doing. Again, I'm not the be-all, end-all here of reviewing, so you know, why should I do that? Or at least as far as, you know, nobody's winning a prize if I have to determine what's the best, again. And overall, again, and sometimes that can give it really a unique and fun feel to it as well. Because, again, there's a thing about things being not perfect. You know, when things are too perfect, it actually turns us off, I think, as viewers. And so those slight imperfections actually add to the enjoyment of the series. But yeah, overall, very good. Again, classic sort of early to mid-90s Japanese anime style. Again, the use of bright colors and the martial arts and the way fights are choreographed. And again, we'll get into fight animation just a little bit. Let's move on to character designs. Overall, I enjoy the character designs. Again, I enjoy color schemes. Rain really pops out as being very different from everybody else. In her more bright, sort of almost neon-like colors, with the sort of turquoise green, the sort of hot pink that she wears. As opposed to Domo, who has sort of a beige and red and black. Argo has that sort of dark military green, Saisaichi. Beige yellow and more toned down, more earthy colors. Same with Chibity and George. You know, George is white and red and very royal, so a bit more brighter with him. But even Chibity, again, sort of more earthy tone, city look. As opposed to Rain, who's a bit, the colors are a bit more feminine, and again, it helps her pop off the screen as well. We'll come back to overall design again, but I'm just focusing on the color here. Pretty much I love all the designs in this series. There are a lot of, some are fun, campy, are very stereotypical, but and feed off stereotypes, but they're done in a campy, fun way to where I enjoy them. I love Domo's character design. It kind of fun, but again, the series was obviously very inspired by both martial arts anime and obviously fighting games, because like Domo is like, he obviously took like all his favorite fighting game characters, which, to be fair, at this time consisted of Street Fighter from Capcom and like Art of Fighting, King of Fighters, and Fatal Fury from SNK. This was before Mortal Kombat and before Tekken and before all the other fighting games. So it's like, yeah, he has like the headband of Ryu. He's got like the jacket and gloves and pants and everything of... oh god, I just had his name in my head. Main character from Fatal Fury, Terry Bogard. There's a character from there, a sort of TIE fighter. Like the hair kind of, he has sort of the same hair as Domo. So it's like, I feel like, yeah, he took that, all that from him. And overall, I like it again that very, for all the guys in here, with the exception of George, which again has that more feminine look, being the more, you know, again, French, effeminate, more pretty looking, the French were overall looked at. Like, if, I'll put it this way, if George was a wrestler, he'd be a bit like, you know, Shin Sasuke Nakamura. maybe that's Domo, I don't know. Anyways, can you tell I'm excited for Nakamura coming to WWE? And if you want to see more of my wrestling reviews, go over to CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. Plug, 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 plug. I'm plugging! But I like all designs for the most part. Like I said, with the exception of George, they're all got this sort of rugged, sort of masculine feel to the design, which I think really works for what the series was going for. Like I said, I made mention Domo, and of course he's got the scars. Like, it's like the checklist of these things, like being masculine, or at least connect, in particular with males, as being very masculine. You know, the cross-shaped scar, the, you know, bigger, burlier, husky, like with Argo, Chinese, again, with kids, like, everything about Saisaichi, like, screams kid for children, like, he's small, diminutive, the ponytail, Chibidi's got, the, like, flamboyancy, to him, got the jacket, really, only lies in the colors, but again, bright, you know, red and blues, which are very considered to be masculine colors, or at least the way they're used here are used in a masculine way for color scheme. I think Allenby is a perfect example of that, in particular when her Gundam outfit, like red and blue, works in a feminine way. And, you know, again, all the other Gundam fighters, like I said, you got characters like Grease Gundam, or the fighter for Grease in India, Nepal, and all of them are like very stereotypical, like wearing traditional dress. The villains are a lot more stereotypical, and that may offend people, but I think it works here well because, again, they're supposed to be villains. It's not, they're not showing these qualities to say, hey, this is the quality of India and this is why India is bad. It's like the qualities that make them bad are because they're villains, not because they come from a particular country. So, again, things like shifty eyes and looking evil looking, they show all of the bad guys to be that. Like, I'm trying to think of Neo Italy's name, because he does make a couple appearances through the series. But yeah, that. Overall, I really enjoy the character designs. Also, with the female character designs, again, you can also tell what the target demographic is, as opposed to, again, it's another way you can tell the target demographic between G Gundam and Gundam Wing. You know, where Gundam Wing, they're beautiful girls. You know, Relina and Kathleena and all the female characters are very lovely, but they're also done in a, there's sort of a masculine beauty to them. That works really well for that series, mind you. And again, go to like both my Gundam Wing reviews to see more information on that. Because I really want you to listen to my series. Plug, 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 plug. But here again, like I said, target audience being more male-based, like much more older women, a lot more curves with, you know, for instance, with Rain. With Natasha, goddamn Argo, why aren't you tapping that? When she comes out in the China dress, but like green hair, glasses, dominant personality, check, 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 check. Then she comes out in that China dress that's like, Jack, please, Argo, why are you not hitting that mother brother? Mother brother, she is telling you she wants to go and be a space pirate and make sweet love. You better eat that fish and get that energy, mother brother. I'm just telling you. That design works. Overall, all of the designs, whether it be female or male, they all work. They're done very well. And are very enjoyable. Because again, the personalities and the acting and everything that goes along with it makes the design work. So the design is there for the potential to be used to the great vessel. And again, character movement design can be sketchy from here and there, particularly early on in the series. But like I said, it's nothing that bothers me personally too much. I don't think it really takes away from the series. And this is speaking of sort of stereotypes in a way, that's a great segue into mech design. This series, again, very stereotypical in the sense of, like, this is what Japan thought of, like, other countries in the 90s, like, you know, Holland was... It was Denmark. Denmark was mermaid. Netherlands was windmill Gundam. They call it Hurricane Gundam because, of course, they can't call it windmill Gundam because who the hell is going to be goddamn afraid of windmill Gundam? but, you know, it's like France was like French Knight. China was a dragon. Again, Russia's Bolt Gundam looked like a big burly Russian, like had the Russian hat and everything. Same with France, England. Again, what we know of England, we know of the Royal Red Guard that guards Buckingham Palace, and rifles. India was a giant snake suit. You know, Greece was Greek god and horse and chariot. Though somebody should tell Japan, I'm sure they know by now, but that, you know, yeah, chariots weren't exactly Greece, that was Rome, but, you know, well, let it slide here. And yes, I know they did have chariots, but it's like more, chariots are really more of a Roman thing than it really is a Greece thing. And then there's some, like, different choices, like Jester Gundam from Portugal. You had a Grizzly Gundam. Really, all from Star Trek. Really, that's the one that's really not stereotype and is really more based off the fighter being a clown. That's Jester Gundam. But all of, like, from Mexico had, like, a sombrero and was a fisherman and had a trident and everything. Grizzly Gundam had the hat, like, looked like a lumberjack. And these aren't bad stereotypes. I look at them as more celebrations. Because to me, using the stereotype in a bad way means you're trying to sit there and say that this is all that this person can be. You know, I'm making this person look bad because that's all anybody who looks like that or from this country or whatever can be. But, you know, stereotypes are really just a way to, like, notice patterns of different areas. And again, whether they're good or bad depends on how a person uses it. So, and here I think they're useful, and they're not here to sit there and they're here to use as more of a celebration than they are to say anybody's bad. But overall, I love them because they're just so fun. Like, I do love that somehow Sweden Gundam, of all the things they can do, apparently is goddamn Sailor Moon. Like, literally, look at that. That's goddamn Sailor Moon. She's in a sailor outfit with the pink bow, with the red bow, and the hair. The only thing missing is the hair and pigtails. I do find that fun. And overall, for the main Gundams, I really love them. I love America's back, Max. I can speak. Maxter Gundam. I love that sort of come out again. Overall, sort of first mode is the gunslinger and has the guns and everything. But, like, that help move to transfer into more of a boxer. And, of course, the thing that, like, extend to be, like, gloves. I love that. very of the like sort of main hero Gundams, I think French Gundam is the one I don't like the most. And I say that saying that I really enjoy it. It's just it's the one that's really pretty standard. But yeah, French Knight. I love Bolt Gundam. Love Bolt Gundam and just that big frame and everything. It makes it just so unique and stand out from the rest. Dragon Gundam, Wufei, thanks you for his inspiration for his Gundam. But at the same time, I love the look and that sort of dragon and sort of Chinese martial artists and a lot of different elements that sort of celebrate China's sort of martial arts history in that Gundam design. And then, of course, we come to Dark and we come to Shining and Burning Gundam and Rising Gundam, for that matter. Or as Burning Gundam is called, God Gundam. And Dark Gundam is Devil Gundam. Again, that was something they changed for the, let's call it Americanization, because again, nobody's going to understand the Buddhist elements of here, that they do now. But I really love Burning Gundam, as the fact that I have a Burning Gundam model kit. I actually have two. I have that and one that I still have to complete, that's from the new Mobile Suit Gundam build series. But yeah, I love it. Again, classic design of the red, white, and blue, with the predominant white and the red and the blue, and it really gives it a defined look. I love it. I love the claws and everything. Again, of course, a hand that's become so iconic where, you know, it's raising the hand and everything. I love the design. I love the color scheme. I love everything. I love the overall design, the very samurai look to it. And then, of course, when it goes into hyper mode, I can't escape the, you know, the Buddhist feel of it. Again, there's a lot of that feel throughout the series. And you know, Dark Gundam is just devilish and has this very ogre, orc, and, you know, look to it. Like, it looks like a monster. It's monstrous. And one of the things I think really helps the series is that Dark Gundam is this great overall protagonist. Like, there's a couple of, not protagonist, but antagonist. Excuse me. But, you know, because throughout the series, there are many antagonists that are, like, using the Dark Gundam. But the Dark Gundam is this overall looming figure that just stays throughout the series. And it just, it really works as, like, fear. Like, Dark, is it gone? Is it gone? It just keeps coming back in its own. It has that really sort of slasher monster, keep coming back feel to it. That really shines through with the design and just, like, the Gundam that's coming out of a giant Gundam head and everything. And then the Gundam heads that it sends out that can fire lasers and have sharp teeth. And just, oh, it's menacing and wonderful to look at. I wouldn't mind getting a model kit of that. Another thing that really makes this series go is the action. And there's martial arts action when they're human, and that's fine. But what really makes it shine is the mech action, which is just, oh, amazing, spot on. And just iconic scene, you know, the iconic way throughout the series they have Shonen Gundam. Again, the poses. There's a very Sentai feel to the series. That's obviously inspired by Sentai and things like Sailor Moon and everything. In the fact that they're all the poses they do. Again, they always show that cinematic over and over again. That puts you in the feel for it. And again, all the fights are choreographed really well. When I think of my favorite, like when the Shuffle Alliance has, when they have to face a Domo in the tournament. And that really works well. Like all the fights with Dark Gundam and all the fights with Master Gundam are really well done. For the most part, I just enjoy almost every fight I saw. There's a couple that didn't, like the one Mexican Gundam was short and really it wasn't about the fight. And I think that's about it. Like, every fight had a unique feel to it. Like, every Gundam had a unique quality that made it unique and different. I mean, each fight seemed interesting. It really is one of the stars of the series is the actual Gundam fights themselves. Because they... And again, everything about each episode is sort of the build-up to that. Or if it's, like, nothing but fights, like, it is towards the end. It's that build up to that final fight of the episode that's very triumphant. And it is almost like clockwork, like, oh, it's 5 minutes to go. It's time for Burning Finger or Shining Finger. But you know what? That works. Here it works. It's a quality that works with the series. And again, makes the fights all that more memorable. So the fights, in particular with the mechs, are just a shining star in this series and really helped the series stand out. It's that thing that really makes it different from the Universal Century, which again, it's war and like there are a lot of fights, but I can't think off the top of my head of like any fight I can really remember from the Universal Century. But if I think of Z Gundam and Gundam Wing and Gundam Seed and Gundam 00 and to the recent Gundam Build series, I can think of fights that I love just off the top of my head. And again, it's that want for action and like to feel the action. And that's the other thing that makes the fights. Like, almost every fight, you can feel the action. You can feel the passion in the way it's drawn and in the way it looks and everything. And it's just choreographed beautifully. So, yeah, just... Of all the animation, the mech designs, and for that matter, the fight animation are what really stand out. What really also helps it is, overall, the background, the special effects are really well done. Whether it be raining or fire or water, again, not incredibly detailed like it might be today, but again, for the time, it's done extremely well, the special effects to give. The shadow work and everything is done extremely well. And then the backgrounds are beautiful. They go to so many really unique looking locations. And the other thing that they really do, and this is sort of the underlying thing that really sets up the theme about war that they all talk about. Because all Gundam series talk about war and sort of the tragedy of war. They just approach it from different ways. And we'll get more into that when we get into the story. But the way G Gundam overall does it is, like, what does war do to the Earth? And with the landscapes, they really show that when they go to Paris and they go to the cities. And they show you how, like, again, just walking to the building, the buildings have cracks and bullet holes and everything. It's like, what has war done to the planet? Whether even with New York, and New York is run down, and all the cities on Earth, all these legendary cities are just run down. You know, the Eiffel Tower is like leaning over. Shinjuku in Tokyo is just like a war zone. It's like, what has war done to the Earth? And the backgrounds do a great job of telling that story, while at the same time being a celebration of different locations around the Earth. And it's just like, it makes the series fun to watch. Like, where are they going to go today? It's at Carmen Sandiego. Like, where in the world will Domo go today? But it adds authenticity and it adds a funness to watching the series. Like, seeing all different locations, which are beautifully drawn. The backgrounds are gorgeous. Whether they be in a city or whether they be in, like, the Guyana Highlands. So, it's just done extremely well. So, overall, with animation, it's really enjoyable. It's extremely well done. The character designs are fun, are unique. Again, really pushed towards that, the demographic that they're going for. But at the same time, they're just enjoyable and fun. And same for the mech designs, which are just all different and unique. And it's just interesting to look at all the different Gundams, even if they are a bit stereotypical. and you don't like stereotypes, they're still fun and enjoyable. But what really makes the animation come together is when it gets to those Gundam fights and the uniqueness and the just the passion and the fact that you can feel those fights. Again, we go back to that idea of emotion and feeling that emotion. You can feel it in the fights. Feel it in the way it's drawn. It just jumps off the screen for you. Is really the key thing that makes it go. And then, of course, backgrounds, like I said, really well done. Enhance that even more. So I think the animation, has a nostalgic feel to it. Because, again, it's mid-90s. I just think it's still really well done. I would love to see an HD release. I'd love to see the series. I mean, that's not saying that the series can't be cleaned up, and that's why I would like to see an HD release. Maybe clean up just a bit there, touch it up. I'd love to see a little bit of touch-ups in here or there and just make it shine even more. But the mainstay of the animation is the fight animation, and it's done extremely well and just pops off the screen. So, with that being said, it's... I usually take a break here because I want to play some promos for some friends, some people whose shows I want you to check out. And when we come back, we are going to get into acting and into story.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like...
Gotcha, Mom!
Or maybe...
Dragon Flame!
How about...
Tatsuo! Ganina!
Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth. Our most brilliant scientists and engineers spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember...
Our Star Blazers!
Or this?
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero and the Epion.
Or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood rules all, the only hope left is the one they call D.
Or this.
Gene, grappler ship's dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise! Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardis is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos!
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew. Home was a pen. Humanity, cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com and on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
Imagine. The world you have known all your life suddenly begins to change.
The changes are almost imperceptible at first, but soon everything comes crashing around you.
Past and present contradict each other. History is no longer immutable.
Inconsistencies begin to pop up. New origins rendered stories only a few years old null and void.
Those long gone are no longer dead.
Worst of all, your friends and loved ones are vanishing. Or changing.
The very fabric of reality surrounding the DC universe is unraveling.
In Smallville, Jor-El and Lara have returned to take Superman back to an unexploded Krypton.
In Metropolis, Superman is faced with a multitude of Batmen.
The time stream, made fragile by countless twists and myriad travels, is now spinning out of control. Time is running out. Quickly.
Only the greatest heroes of every era and reality can stop this crisis in time.
And stop it they must, or the DC Universe will cease to exist, perhaps never to have existed at all.
The heroes and villains of the DC Universe are facing their Zero Hour.
In 1994, DC published Zero Hour, Crisis in Time, a five-issue miniseries designed to fix some of the continuity issues that had cropped up since the conclusion of the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
This was a huge deal, and because of that, and because Superman played such a large part in that story, From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, hosted by Jeffrey Taylor
and Michael Bailey,
will be covering the Superman issues, as well as Zero Hour itself.
We will also be looking at all of the official crossovers to the series, in addition to devoting several episodes to the follow-up event, Zero Month, where Superman meets a brand new enemy.
Conduit.
Zero Hour.
Zero Month.
Only at From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. From Crisis to Crisis can be found at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com, and is part of the Superman Podcast Network, which is located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Also be sure to check out the Fortress of Baileytude, which is located at www.fortressofbaileytude.com. There you will find new episodes of From Crisis to Crisis, as well as all kinds of fun bits of business connected to Zero Hour and Zero Month. Superman.
Captain Marvel.
Batman.
It is 1985.
Robin of Earth 2.
Sergeant Rock.
The Legion of Superheroes.
This is the most eagerly awaited comic book event in 50 years.
Tommy Tomorrow.
Jonah Hex.
Commandy.
It will one day be called the greatest comic book event of all time.
Swamp Thing.
Wonder Woman.
The New Teen Titans.
The Haunted Tank.
Infinity Incorporated.
Worlds Will Live.
Green Arrow.
Worlds Will Die.
Supergirl.
The Flash.
And that is only the beginning.
The Justice League of America.
The All-Star Squadron.
The Huntress.
Ariane.
The Metal Man.
Firestorm. The Nuclear
the
Man.
The Outsiders.
Green Lantern.
The Blue Beetle.
The Crime Syndicate.
Warlord.
The Guardians of the Universe.
Tales of the Justice Society of America proudly presents...
And many, many more.
Crisis on Infinite Earths. The DC Universe will never be the same.
Coming January only at TwoTrueFreaks.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it with acting. We're going to start off with protagonists, and overall, I think most of the acting in the show was done really, really good. This is an Ocean Group production. Again, it's Bandai, so that they did a lot of stuff with Ocean Group. I'm trying to find it. Yeah, it is Ocean Group. They did the adaptation. The recording studio was Blue Water. So Blue Water did a lot of Ocean Group's. They did Dragon Ball Z. They did Mobile Suit Gundam Zeta. They did Zoids. So a lot of these... That's where you may have heard these people in a lot of productions like that. Some don't do voice acting. They've gone on to do other things. But overall, I just want to say this. I think they did a good job. To me, this was done in 2000s, like 1999, 2000, 2001, these recordings. And the thing about that is that I still consider it as like the early days of recording. And like this past year at Otakon, got a chance to interview, as part of a larger interview, Sean Schemmel and Christopher R. Sabat, and you know, they were talking about like how in the early days they would have to go get the Mexican recording just to get the footage as quickly as possible because it took so long to get from Japan. And you know, that's something to talk about. Like, it took a long time to get from Japan, and again, this was pre-digital, so they couldn't fix anything to fix flubs that much. And so it was a really hard ADR, which I don't think people really know how hard ADR is to do. It's much easier to do a homegrown series to where you do the lines first and then they animate around you, but they have to like put words in some basically somebody else's mouth and their speech patterns. Is really hard to do. So overall, I think they did a good job. And there is an iconicity to these voices. I mean, like I said, G Gundam obviously is still a fan favorite. And again, the acting is part of that. Domo Kashi, which is... by the way, let me first go down the voice list. Mark Goth as Domo Kashi. Jennifer Holder as Rain Mikimura. Roger Rhodes as Chibity Crockett. Sam Roberts as George Dasan. Zoe Slursha, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, as Sai Saishi. Stefan Holgate as Argo Galski. Matt Imbri as Schwartz Bruder. And Dave Petiti as Master Asia. And I apologize if I messed up any of those names. By the way, my gimmick for this show is to completely mess up people's names. Not that the internet gives me any help on how to pronounce them, but that's here nor there. I think Mark did a wonderful job with Domo Kashi. Very iconic. There's some places here or there where, again, it's more due to what they had to work with, where it was just hard to meet that lip flat, and you could tell it, by the way. But as far as his acting is concerned, early on in the series, and I think this is true for a lot of series, you could tell he was still trying to get the character. The pivotal point to where his character changed and where he really got good with the character was around, I want to say it's episode 13 or 14, when he gets to Shinjuku and meets back up with, and has his reunion with Master Asia. And there's that point to where Domo breaks down. And I just like, that's where emotion finally came out. It's like, he would be hit and miss with the emotion, and he still kind of was hit and miss up until the tournament. But it's like, I think he really found it though first in that line of episodes, or that particular episode where, you know, Domo is breaking down and is crying for his master. And again, that goes back to that whole point of emotion and feeling that emotion. And emotion's part in the theme of the story, which again, we'll get to. So, but really after the tournament, that's where I think he really shined. And of course, again, he had to do a good job because again, the lines from the series are just become so iconic. And they're great lines, but they also need a good performer to deliver them so that they'll stay memorable. And honestly, who forgets? This hand of mine is burning red. Its loud roar tells me to grasp victory. Here I go, erupting, burning finger. And I'm trying not to, you know, throw my voice out. Even just doing that hurts. And like, try doing that and see how that hurts. And he had to probably do that over and over. I'm sure there were days where he lost his voice by the end of it. So, you know, here's a drink to you for the pain you went through, Mr. Mark. And Jennifer Holder, again, played that sort of feminine opposite to just sort of the more masculine voice that Mark had, that really balanced each other, and they really worked well off each other. And she was a lot more consistent, I think, than Mark, and did a great job, again, having Rain be that sort of backbone support for Domo and portraying that, and having the emotion. And she did a great job throughout the series, so whether it was serious or whether it was more comedic. Like, one of my favorite comedic moments is where Allenby and Domo are, like, playing around in his cop pick. And he's like, get out! It's like, oh, Domo. And just really, really did a great job of working with that. And just very constant all the way through. And all of the other protagonists did a great job. I really enjoyed Robert Rhodes as Jiminy Crockett. I think it worked very well. One thing I like about this is that they could have easily been stereotyped, like tried to do accents, and they didn't. There are series where doing accents works, and there are series where it doesn't. This is one of the series that, because of the camp and the comedy of it, doing accents would have hurt it. So I actually appreciate that they didn't do the accents. Even with that being said, like, for instance, in Roberts with George Sassant, he threw in a couple French words here and there that helped lean towards it and actually made the performance better. All the names here, but Olena Gilbertson, who played Natasha, again, had, funny enough, named Natasha, because almost had that bit of, like, Natasha. She sounded like a Natasha, you know? She sounded almost Natasha, like from Rocky and Bullwinkle. So, I really do enjoy that. But Argo Galski didn't sound Russian at all, but he sounded like a space pirate, which really did help it too. And of course, Zoe is Sasachi, never kid feel. All the protagonists work really well. What kind of helped really was in the antagonist point of view. Now, like I said, David T with Master Asia, who was really the main big human antagonist. But you also had a. Where is he on this list? David Kelly as Major Abue. I know I mispronounced that. And then, of course, you also had Ben Jeffrey as Prime Minister Wong Yu Fat. Wong Yu Fat. That sounds wrong! I know. I'm sure I'm pronouncing it wrong, but just. Hey, here's David Wong Yu Fat. Like, what did you say about me? And I'm like, no, he's Wong Yu Fat. I know of. Out of context, Fata and Big Lip Alligator moment all at the same time. Anyways, moving on. But, you know, they did a great job with their villains, but their villains are a lot more over the top. David Kelly in particular, though, because he had to be more subdued. So his character really worked when his character changes and he realized. Spoiler alert for those who've not seen this series. Spoiler! So, like, skip ahead a minute. Minute or 30 seconds or a minute. But when his character, the twist is that he's the real villain and that they lied all about the Dark Gundam and everything. So, yeah, it works really well. But the main villain of it was, obviously, Master Asia. And he did such a great job. One of the great things about doing a villain right is having the villain be completely understandable and connective with the audience. And, like, there's at no point that you don't not see Master Asia. I mean, you don't know his plan, but in particular, once his plan comes out and why he's doing what he's doing, you completely understand it. You may not, and again, that's the thing about great villains, is great villains are ones that you completely understand and you can see why they're doing what they're doing. You just disagree with the means they're going about doing it. And in particular here, he becomes very sympathetic because you disagree with the way he's going about things, but you completely understand his pain and his sorrow. And but he does a great job in emoting that. And again, that emotion. He does such a great job throughout the series and just makes Master Asia such a memorable villain. One that's very very sympathetic to. He's fearful, but you're sympathetic. Like I said, you're apparently sympathetic is my new favorite word. But at the same time, you're also very fearful because he did a great job of giving Master Asia this, like, commanding, like, for lack of a better term, this master voice. Like, he sounded like a martial arts master. Almost like sort of classic Chinese martial arts master, that final master that's behind everything and sending his soldiers to do the fighting, like, you think you're going to face me? I am the master. I'll be much harder. It's almost in that sense, not obviously as cheesy, but it still works very, very well. So, again, while the others were good, they didn't have as much screen time as far as antagonists. Master Asia was the main one, and so Dave Petit, as the antagonist, had to carry the show, especially since, while the Dark Gundam was menacing and worked really well, it basically became a voice for the Dark Gundam in its own way, and really helped add to the series, add to the fun feel, both to the fun feel and also to legitimizing both the Dark Gundam and Master Asia as a threat. So, overall, I think the series has run extremely well. I mean, the acting. My mind is somewhere else. But overall, I think the acting's done well. I mean, if there was one category that I had to say was the weakest of, like, of the four categories I'm covering, acting would be one, would be it, I should say. But it's not because it's bad. It's actually very good, but it's like everything else, animation, music, and story, as we'll get to, is just great as well. So it's like, it's the worst of the best, let me put it that way. So, it's not so much the worst. It's, of everything, it's the weakest, but it's still very good. And it, again, they do a great job of their series. And again, the voices are just still as memorable as the first time I heard them. So that's another thing that shows me that they're good, is that, like, I get a bit of a nostalgic feel listening to these voices when I was watching it. You know, when you're reviewing a series that's older, that you haven't, particularly for me, I hadn't seen Gundam in at least 7, 8, yes, possibly 9 years. I honestly can't remember the last time I've seen, other than the one DVD I have and the 4 episodes I can watch. You know, we haven't seen it in that long. You know, listening to voices, do they remain nostalgic? And here they do. And so that tells me another thing, that, you know, they were very well done, because they stick with me. In particular, Matt Imbria as Schwartz Bruder against had that very commanding voice that worked really well and also helped the series. With that, let's move on to story. And with story, I guess the first one is to talk about the overall theme of the series. And then the overall theme, again, like I said, all Gundam franchises tackle war and why war is bad in some form or not. And I know you're saying, like, not just Gundam, but there's a lot of series that do that, which is why it's in what their theme is, how they're tackling, how they're telling the story, what particular part of it that they're telling that makes each series unique. Again, it's that idea that you can tell the same story in a way over and over again. It's just using different themes, talking about different things, talking about different parts of the problem that ultimately help us understand it and allow us to... And that's one of the things that, again, that more hopeful ending towards the end. By the way, before I go any further, because I just dawned on me, if you've not seen this series, this is story part. There's going to be spoilers. So you might want to end the episode now. Thank you for listening. I hope you check out next week's episode. If you're still with me, again, you've been warned. But again, the speech that Dr. Kashu gives at the end, to where he says, you know, yeah, there are problems with the Gundam 5, but now we know what the problems are, so we can isolate them and fix them. That's ultimately the thing here. You know, the series, yeah, it's saying war is bad, but it's looking at a particular problem of war that we may not think about with war to isolate it so we can show the problem so maybe we can fix it, or at least fix what makes it a problem. In this series, the overall idea is how we tend to look at war as a game, which we do. A lot of times we'll have this very, Republicans especially, I'm sorry to all my Republican friends, you know it's true that Republicans love to throw sort of war talk and put boots in asses and everything. And other countries do it around the world too. And it's almost as if war is this game to where, you know, you have to be on our side and everything. And that's a big theme of this series. Again, they've made war into this game after they've already destroyed Earth, and now it's destroying Earth even more, because that's the other part of it, is ultimately what war does to where we live. War destroys where we live. War destroys our planet. War hurt, you know, not just that it kills people, it destroys land. It makes land inhospitable to the point to where they all had to go to space. And even then, they didn't learn from their lessons, and they created the Gundam fight and sent Gundams down and said, and in their rules, like, you can do whatever you want in the cities. I mean, like, to the point where people around the world were afraid of the Gundam fights because, you know, they caused destruction. You see that in the first episode where everybody's evacuating. Like, we don't like your kind, your Gundam fighters here. And I think overall throughout the series, they stick with that theme about, you know, the world looking at war as a game. And they establish that theme, and it just constantly, it's running through the entire main plot, you know. Dark, in particular with Dark Gundam being sort of a metaphor for the sins of this, and them trying to, there's a very Buddhist feel here of that, you know, again, Domo and the God Gundam, as it's called, trying to repent for their sins so that the Dark Gundam doesn't destroy the Earth. So there's that as well. So again, that's one instance of it. But again, throughout it, showing the land, and again, like I said, with animation, the showing of the landmarks, showing of the destruction. You know, you have a very visual symbol of what war has done, and yet the sort of way people are almost out of it to where, you know, like, you can't see the destruction that's right in front of your eyes. And that's, again, it's one of the things that ultimately makes Master Ace just such a sympathetic character, to where he tells a story like, you know, I that went down to participate in the Gundam fight to see if I can change things, and I went and I won the Gundam fight, and I'm like, I'll finally be able to change things. And then he looks before him and sees what he had contributed to. He was going to save the Earth, but then he sees that he had contributed to the even more destruction of the Earth, and it just broke him. And again, it's what makes him such a sympathetic character that works so well. And then again, there's something, another underlying theme that goes along with this in this, as far as the more character-driven theme. You know, the war games and what it does to Earth, that's the more general theme that's with everybody. But then there's a more personal theme that's within each of the characters, and that is sort of the fighting spirit and the use of emotion. Again, we talked about emotion a lot and about feeling emotion. And so there is a very general theme of the fighter about being in control of your emotions to bring out your latent ability. You know, you see that with Domo in particular. The fact that, you know, again, he has his super mode or hyper mode, and he first brings it out with anger, just this outpouring of uncontrollable emotion. But it come again, the realization as they go through the series, like, super, he's only activating, he's not realizing the full power of it, because to really access the super, or for that matter, the hyper mode, he has to be able to control it. And it's not anger, it's having that clear mind, being clairvoyant. There's a very Buddhist idea to this idea of being able to control your emotions by by clearing your mind and not allowing your emotions to consume you, for that matter. So those are the things, and they're all done very well throughout the series. It's like, oh yeah, they're talking about this theme now. And the thing is that they go back and forth between the general theme of the series and those more personal character-driven themes. And it's very well balanced and back and forth, and they do tell a really good story of the ideas of being, with the personal theme of being more clairvoyant, being more in control of your emotions, which is a very feminine, again, like I said, very feminine idea of the ability to control your emotions, and using more, both controlling your emotions and using your emotions to make yourself better. That's why I talk about it as like, it's odd that, again, its demographic is male, but it has this very positive feminine theme to it, and the ability to control your emotions. I know there's people that will argue, well, no, what world do you live in? We show nothing but emotions that are out of control. It's like, that's why this is a positive. That's a much more long-winded explanation than I'm probably going to get into right now. But we'll get back to it another day. So like I said, balance that with, again, the overall theme. And they do nail it. There are times where it does become a bit overbearing, but it never takes away from the series. And overall, I enjoy it. And again, what helps is the fun, campy feel, as we'll talk about when we get into comedy. Then there is the sort of the main plots and sort of side plots. The main plot, of course, being Domo and Rain's quest for the Dark Gundam to stop Gyoji. And, of course, everybody's trying to get a hold of the Dark Gundam and use its power. And Domo and Rain, and for that matter, the love that develops over the course of the series, that is actually built upon from years and years of friendship, overcoming the darkness of the Dark Gundam. And then, of course, you know, throughout the series, I had mixed feelings on the romantic relationship. But by the end of it, I think, like, because all of it was, like, building and building, story building and putting building blocks there, it was all building blocks for the build up to the end, which I thought was done extremely well. The mystery aspect also of Dark Gundam and their finding, and it's just like constantly the Dark Gundam being this menacing force, and it's like feeling like it's overpowering them. And then that very triumphant part in episode 23 and 24, where they both overcome Master and Dark Gundam, only for a couple episodes down the line for it to come back. And it's like, no, they killed it. We know, we watched it killed it. And that, again, add to its menacing force. What also helps here is, again, Domo's personal individual plot here of him building trust. And again, this goes back to that theme of emotion. He's just filled with anger, and so he treats people horribly. But as the series goes along, the mellowing out, the more clairvoyance, and the friendships that he builds, basically, he's the king. Again, the whole idea, he's the king of hearts. Get it? King of hearts, heart, emotion. Did they knock you enough times over the head with the 2x4 for that one? But it's all done really well, and it's not meant to be subtle, but at the same point in time, as much as I make the joke, they're not like hitting you over the head with a 2x4. It's not like constant in your face, but it's there and you can see it. With the Dark Gundam, the mystery of the Dark Gundam, I think, is done extremely well. And it allows for great story moments, like I said, between Domo and Rain. That also allows to build up the idea of them falling in love, which is very believable. And ultimately, that idea that, you know, love is what's going to conquer the darkness. And that final episode to where You know, for all the talk about being clairvoyant, it's the expressing of emotion while in control of it that ultimately wins the day, to where Domo, in front of the entire world, listening, I say, like, Rain, I can't be without you because I love you. And that breaks the spell. To which, by the way, nice of you. How, of all the things for Domo to think about wanting to bring with him, he brings his cape when he leaps towards Rain, like, to cover her up. Like, gotta keep that PG rating, huh, player? I'm sorry. It's one of the things, watching the final episodes, I was watching that. And this probably goes more towards comedy and fan service, but it's like, I couldn't help but think, like, wow. They really wanted to keep that PG rating. Because, you know, she's naked in the scene. They never show anything. And that's the thing. There are a couple of scenes where female characters are naked, but they never show any nudity. But it is fan service. But we'll get to more of that in a second. And of course, that's where they're like doing that dancing move. And the numerous times where both Domo and Rain have to work together. Again, it builds toward that. Their plot of their relationship and their quest to stop the Dark Gundam is so intertwined. And it's intertwined very wonderfully. And it's just fun to watch. And again, that goes to comp, which I keep saying we'll get to. There's a reason. Just wait for it. It's like the dragons in Game of Thrones. They're coming. And then there's all the other characters' individual plots, which are really done well. One of the great things, and one of the reasons why the main plot, Domo and Rain and their quest work so well, is there's numerous times where they step back. You know, one thing is that with the Gundam franchise, in particular G Gundam, Gundam Wing, and everything after, is like, again, mostly because they're like, these series are built upon like being DVD releases. So like, you could tell like it's four to five episodes as like basically this arc, and then there's this arc. And so the series is done in arcs. And within each, you know, again, the first arc is, you know, introducing Domo and introducing the main characters. And throughout each arc, which is about 5 to 10 episodes, usually if it's five, the next arc is five, and then they might have, like, for instance, the tournament. There's the bigger arc that is the tournament, and then there's sort of the first five, six, seven episodes that are, like, the main fights. Then there's the Dark Gundam coming, and the mysterious plans behind it. And then there's the final battle for the tournament. And then there's the final four episodes that are, you know, Japan winning power, but Ube hatching his, unveiling and launching his plan. And, you know, so on and so on. And one of the things I like is that with the individual characters like Saichi, and Argo and George, and, you know, again, there are these episodes where they go away from Domo, and Domo, he's just like, for instance, in the guy in Highlands, he's training. The characters have come to basically, because again, they're now part of the Shuffle Alliance, and they're drawn to him. But again, that episode is more on them and building them up. And even though Domo is there and very prevalent along with Rain, the focus isn't on him, and it's drawn to somebody else, and it allows you that chance to step away from him and be refreshed before going back to that main story. So the individual plots work very well in that sense of, again, helping both Domo and Rain by allowing us to step back for them. It also helps build these characters to make them believable and sympathetic and to connect with them. And again, it's really great to be able to watch these characters grow as well. That's one of the other things, is not just Domo and Rain, but all the other characters. They're given a chance to grow, and they're, you see, one of the key indicators of an anime, regardless of where it's created, is the story, and the story having growth to where it is extremely different from the beginning to the end. You know, where they are at the end, they've grown, and they've had, basically, they've evolved. Whereas a cartoon, like, say, Family Guy, they never change. There may be a moral to the episode, but they have not changed. And there's really not growth. There's some growth sometimes when it's like 17 seasons like The Simpsons or Family Guy. But for the most part, there's really no growth. Whereas here, after 50 episodes, all of the characters are in an extremely different place. And again, just to watch their quest to follow their dreams and basically being able to accomplish their dreams. That's done extremely well. So again, I think the character plots are done extremely well. They allow the characters to grow. They add to the characters' individual stories. That growth is paced very well. And that's one thing. I think the series is extremely well paced, but their growth is really well paced. And it allows us to add the story, and more importantly, it allows us to step back so we're not constantly dominated by the main story and the quest of the Dark Gundam and the theme. There's so much going on in this series, but it's all extremely well-paced, and it's all extremely well-balanced. Like, we're going to spend some time with... We're going to have this episode that covers... is more about the overall theme, and it's the Dark Quest, and then we're going to take the next episode, which is that... But it's also talking about the more personal theme, while at the same time introducing this individual character's plot and his motivation. And it's just all extremely well balanced. It allows you to connect with the characters. It allows you to feel the characters' emotions and their motivations and make the characters believable. And that's why you continue to watch. And the thing that adds to it even more, and it really puts it over the top, that makes it enjoyable is the comedy and the fan service and all of that that goes. And this is comedy and fan service is the intangible adjective of a story that really, you know, again, it gives you a chance to step back and laugh and look at the larger picture and everything. Like I said, fan service is for, like I said, there are some, there's, I mean, just the way the female characters are drawn, much more sexy. Then, like, Gundam Wing lends itself to that. But the fan service is never played to where it disrespects the character. It's done for fun. You know, for instance, there's an episode where Saisaichi is, like, wearing the guy in the Highlands, and Domo's training. He's training in the water, and Rain's watching him. And Saisaichi comes down. He's just trying to escape training. And flips up Rain's skirt, and you see her panties. Which are white. Well, just to make sure that we know that Rain is pure. Because while it is a fan service, it is comedic, especially getting to see Domo blush. Like, you saw, didn't you? Like, how do I answer this? What is the answer? Again, that whole idea. Rain is shown as extremely pure throughout the series. Again, that's why she was chosen as the perfect sort of operator for the Dark Gundam at the end. Again, spoiler alert. But you already know that, don't you? But to really drive home in that fact, as they do throughout the series of showing her as being pure of heart, is with this fan service scene in particular, the flipping of the skirt, and it has white panties. It's like, if I guarantee you, like, in the same episode, there is a point to where Saisaichi ends up spying on Natasha, who's, like, taking a bath all by herself. Argo, you are an absolute idiot. Where were you? But she's taking a bath and just... The way she was drawn in that scene was to be sultry and mysterious. And again, that's something that Natasha is shown throughout the series as well. Again, these individual plots that I talk about, it's not just the Gundam fighters. It's also their compatriots and how they're working with them. And again, like I said, it's extremely paced very well. But again... I said, the fan service there, be funny, but at the same time, we're showing that Rain is pure because she has white panties, because again, white, pure. Get it? Get it? Has it been beaten over your head enough? Sounds like I'm angry and I'm lying about the series. I'm not. I find it hilarious. And I'm having fun. I'm having a lot of fun doing this. But in that context, all the comedy, which is extremely well done, and there's a lot of great humorous and funny scenes, in particular during the tournament arc where it's done fun, just the way the kids act their day and everything. It all lends itself to allowing us to step back and take that breather. You know, I think of the arcade where Alan Libby and Domo fight. It's like, we're scared. Those two kids, the tournament really added a great breath of fresh air that allowed some great comedy to be there. And that's really the one thing that, if I had to say something about the story, is that if I split it into halves, episodes 1 to 24 and then 25 onward, which was a tournament arc, the first half was the weaker part, whereas the back half of G Gundam was much more stronger. And I think part of that was that a lot more comedy was allowed to come in. Of course, the first part was the building. And again, it's not that it was bad, it's just of the two, it was weaker. And like those kids and the old man, and the fact that there was a lot more comedic features. Like I said, the Saisaichi episode where he falls in love, and the music and everything is, they're just doing everything, and oh, we're so cheerful, and it's not, we're having a gun to fight, and I can't tell that you're probably going to be related to the fighter I'm about to fight, and no. It's very campy, but it's that fun, funny campy. And it just works very well. So overall, the comedy and a little bit of fan service all contribute really well. There are meanings to it. It's very funny. It's enjoyable. It adds to that campy feel. Overall, when we look back at G Gundam, G Gundam's a really great series. And there's a reason why it, along with Gundam Wing, which have to be looked at together as, at least in Japan, putting Mobile Suit Gundam as a franchise on that same level as Macross. And here in America, ultimately it was G Gundam and Gundam Wing. Mind you, you have to realize that Gundam Wing was shown, most Americans probably saw it on Toonami. So we saw Gundam Wing first, and Gundam, I mean, I've gushed as much as I can about Gundam Wing. And it had that great story that really connected, I think, with those of us who are part of the Toonami generation. And then G Gundam was an addition to that on a different level. Ultimately, that helped put Gundam as a franchise over the top in America over Macross. And again, it's just, you can see it here with the series. It's just so fun. It's a bit campy. Yeah, it can be a bit stereotypical, but it's done in a fun, harmful way. Harmless. I said the wrong word. Fun, harmless way. It's just enjoyable. You connect with the characters. You feel the characters. The themes of the series stand out extremely well. And they're put in front, but they're not beating you over the head. And then they allow the music and the animation and even the acting to really, again, express those story beats and everything. End of the day, G Gundam is just a fun series that I will enjoy watching over and over and over and over and over and over again. It's memorable in so many places, so many memorable lines, great mech designs, music that's outstanding. Those who say it's awful, they're not letting go, excuse the word, and please don't start singing Frozen songs, but they're not letting go of what Universal Century was. They can't see that you can talk about war and the horrors of war, do it in a fun way that's enjoying, entertaining, and still gets the point across about the horrors of war, and at the same time still do it justice. And that the fact is that watching a series or learning about stuff in a fun, entertaining way can ultimately do a lot more good towards teaching us and making us realize the mistakes And fixing those mistakes then just beating us over the head with tragedy and darkness. I'm not saying that Universal Century is awful, because it's not. It's fun, but it's just so confusing, and there's so much sorrow that it can drown you. And that's what turned people off from it, to be fair. Yes, there are people that love the series for that, for its unrelentingness. I'm not going to lie, it is fun. But for a larger audience, and to teach those lessons to a larger audience, and for them to get it, shows like G Gundam and Gundam Wing and Gundam Seed had to happen the way they did. Ultimately, G Gundam is great. And I respect those who don't like it. Not everybody's going to like this. But you have to respect that at the end of the day, it is a good series. And it was good for the franchise. And it, for that matter, G Gundam, in particular along with Gundam Wing, saved the franchise. Because they didn't know how much longer the franchise was going to go. So they ultimately decided to hit that reboot button, and it was the best thing Sunrise and the makers of Gundam did for the franchise. G Gundam is an outstanding series with iconic mech designs, wonderful music, a wonderful story that is deeper and really anybody gives it credit for, and it's just so much fun to watch. I give G Gundam a 5 out of 5. It is, to me, it is one of those must-see anime series. And for any anime collector, it's a must-have for his collection. And you know what? If you're not an anime fan, I suggest watching it too, because even if you aren't an anime fan, it's just so much fun to watch. The comedy is great, the music is great, the design work of mechs and the fighting, it's also awesome. Go out and see G Gundam. There's a reason it has a great legacy that it does, and the reason it's so memorable, because you know what? This hand of mine right here is definitely burning red, and its loud roar tells me to grasp victory. And G Gundam definitely grasped its victory. So that's it for this review. I hope you enjoyed it. As I start to... Wow. I'm looking at the time I've been talking. I can ramble, can't I? This is going to be fun. But I hope you really did enjoy it. You know what? It's been fun. It's been 5 months. I'm having fun doing this again. Which is going to be the main focus for 2016. To get back to having fun. It really is. So, that is it for this review. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any emails or comments or anything that you want to leave the show, remember there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can send us an email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com, all one word. You can find us on Stitcher, which I have to work on getting the RSS feed updated for that. I really am. I'm going through some computer issues, as usual, as part of January and February. It seems like every year around January and February, I have computer issues. I'm working through those, but once those get fixed, I'll probably be able to get started on updating the RSS feed proper. But you can find us on Stitcher.com by searching for Absolution Network. You can search for us on Facebook at Absolution Network. To look for the site, also you can search Absolution Network on Google and Yahoo and all that. And for that matter, you can also find us and leave us a comment at our website. Like I said, you can leave us a comment on Facebook by searching for the Absolution Network. And you can leave a comment on the site at www.an.132productions.com. You can also make sure to check out all our 132 Productions content. Like I said, CMG's wrestling reviews, as I may mention to earlier. My Tom's Toonami D&D, among other things that I do for the site. I've moved Tokyo SOS. Check out also for me moving Spectacular Webs, or at least what we did in celebration of the last episode I did, which was on Spectacular Spider-Man. So that people can have those episodes, along with Hexcast, which I plan on doing a new episode to start that process as well. So, yeah. Just check out all of that stuff. Also, make sure you can tell it's been a while. I've kind of forgotten what I need to do. Even though I do this on other podcasts that I do. But also make sure you check out Shin Tiger Kuro, his video game, and his wrestling videos. John Romos, and his Sentai videos, and much more right here on the Absolution Network, which again you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also on our sidebar, you can see our friends, people like Michael Bailey, and his Views from the Long Box, Steven Stryker, and the Major Spoilers podcasting site. And of course, my good friend Scott Gardner, his Tutu Freaks, among others. Check them out. They do podcasting better than I can do. And I'd say that not to be down on myself. You know, they're the people who I learned to do podcasting from. So really do check them out. They do great stuff as well. And like I said, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative, episode 124. Next week, got 2 more weeks in January before I get to February, where I'm probably going to start reviewing some more romantic stuff. So I'm going to sort of stick on a more Toonami sort of Cartoon Network theme. In fact, I'm going to review a crossover movie. Don't see those much often. But this is a crossover of 2 franchises, both that have been on Adult Swim, in fact. They haven't made their appearance on yet. They should. One of these series features, or at least the series was from the late 1970s, early 1980s, and featured a wily thief and his crew, which featured a gunslinger, a swordsman, and a goddamn foxy. Ow! Ooh! Hurt me so good, babe! Called Lupin the Third. And the other was a detective, high school detective, who, upon being forcibly given a new drug, was shrunk to the size of a kid and now helps solve mysteries as Conan Edogawa. I'm talking about Case Closed. I am talking about the Lupin the Third Conan crossover movie from 2012. That's next week. But until next time, my Tsunami Generation.
Find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous.
Stay here.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom, signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.